Our guest today is the Chief Executive Officer of ComEd. He leads ComEd, an Exelon company, which powers the lives of more than 4 million residential and business customers, or 70% of Illinois' population. In addition to his business leadership, our guest today's charitable and civic leadership includes being a member of the boards of United Way of Metropolitan Chicago and the Lyric Opera of Chicago. And just last Wednesday, he led a National Volunteer Month event with the Knight Ministry by distributing food on Chicago's South Side. And we are honored to have with us today the president of the Knight Ministry, Paul Heyman, to join us today. Paul, where are you? There we go. There. Paul, thank you for being with us, and thank you for his service. And our guest today is so smart that he has his wife, Amy, join us today. Let's give her a round of applause, Amy. And they have both toured Misericordia, where Amy will soon be a regular volunteer. I hope at the salon, which my wife and sister and Lois and others cooked up, because it's a fabulous little hair salon for those children. To go off campus, it's a big deal. You got to sign out, do all this. But now they put this on campus, so I hope you get to volunteer over there. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Dominguez. Joe, you're on. Come on. Have
fun up here. Hello. Hi, everybody. I often say that any day that starts off with a kiss from my wife is a pretty good day. No. Jay said that I was smart enough to bring her, but the truth is the real smarts was in marrying her. So thanks, Amy, for being here today. But what makes this an unbelievable day, and it occurs to me that I probably ought to end it and just close my remarks and walk off the stage, is a blessing from Sister Rosemary. So thank you so much. You talked about what ComEd has done for your organization, but you've inspired us. You've inspired everybody in this room. You're a treasure. So it's been 9 months since I've been on the job. I think I celebrated 9 months exactly a week ago today. And while I've never been pregnant and don't really know what it's like, I think I got a little bit of a glimpse of it. Started off with euphoria, then was a little bit of nausea, then overwhelmed, and then finally some excitement for what's about to come. So today, it's my good fortune to share with you what excites us at ComEd about the future of electricity and this partnership we have with this amazing city. But before I do that, let me just talk about the City Club, Jay. I told Amy this. When I first came to Chicago, the City Club event was the first formal event I had been at. And it was just kind of an amazing experience meeting folks and coming to the events. This is just something really special. And having lived in a number of different places, I could tell you that it's not replicated elsewhere. So I just appreciate, Jay, everything you and Jackie and Ed do to keep this going. It's just a marvelous forum, and I can't believe I'm privileged enough to be able to address the group. As I told you, it's a special day for me. This may be my first and only opportunity to address this group. I could assure you it's my first and only opportunity to speak to Amy uninterrupted for 25 minutes. So, yeah, I know, you know. It is, you take and you give away, right? I'll get paid back for that. So let me kind of jump right into it. This is one of our linemen, Zach Tagliarelli. Zach, stand up for a second. He's much more handsome than... Uh, You know, while the City Club has been welcoming, the weather here in Chicago has not been all that welcoming. We just to give you some sense of this, we have an emergency operations center we open during extreme weather events. We opened it 5 times all of last year, which was kind of pretty normal for the last few years. This year, in the first 8 weeks, we opened it 5 times. And so the welcome came to an abrupt end for me right after Thanksgiving when we experienced that ice storm. And ice and wind are the most horrible things for the electric system because it attaches to branches, brings down trees into lines, it attaches to all of our stuff, and water and electricity don't mix well to begin with. And then when you add a little bit of wind, it could end up being catastrophic. And then we survived that, and then we ended up right in the middle of this polar vortex event where this picture was taken of Zach and other heroes from ComEd going out and fighting the elements to keep the power on for families and businesses. A number of those guys are here today. Dean Apple, Terry McGoldrick, the heads of Local 15 represent them, and they are just amazing. I will tell you, you don't get a sense of what it is running this company. You don't feel the inspiration, the awe of it, until you see folks go out there and tackle elements where people just don't even want to be out. And so, you know, we would like to think this is kind of a one-and-done event, but as we've studied the science, it appears to us this is going to be a new normal. And to show you that, you know, my sense of humor is not alone at ComEd, I talk about the planet and warm water coming up over the Pacific and pushing out cold Arctic air, which is what captures these vortexes. So my chief of staff, the lovely Diana Sharp, got me this globe to represent that. But basically what does happen, I'm going to use it, Diana. You gave it. I'm going to use it. This warm air comes up, pushes the cold air out, and it pushes it over North America and on the other side of the planet over Russia. And if you were following it, you know that on certain days, that means the weather here in Chicago is worse than in Alaska or in the Arctic regions, and we certainly saw that. And what some of the work that's been done recently has indicated is that this is going to be a normal occurrence. It's going to be a feature of our winters going forward, and frankly, having spent the last 15 years of my life really involved in the climate science and studying it, there's very little we're going to be able to do between now and 2050 absent some miraculous end to the use of fossil fuels in an abbreviated period of time, which will be difficult for the reasons I'll describe in a moment. But this is going to be something we're going to have to deal with, and our brave men and women are going to be out there in the elements. It requires us to reinvent literally all of the equipment and the gloves we use and all of that sort of thing as we go forward. And as we think about the future at ComEd, weather being worse is not the only challenge we're going to have. We see 3 trends very, very clearly at this point. We see electrification of the transportation sector in the name of climate. And I think I read an article, I think for the first quarter of 2019, Tesla Model 3 sales outpaced every other luxury sedan out there, the BMWs, the Mercedes, the Lexuses, the Cadillacs, the Acuras, 28 different brands measured. The Tesla outsold every single one of them. And in fact, if you put numbers 2, 3, and 4 together and aggregate their sales, it's roughly the equivalent of what Tesla did in the first quarter of 2019. So I don't know how many folks in the room have electric vehicles. I have to confess I have a Ford F-150 that Amy is trying to get me to get rid of, but I'm holding on to dearly. But we know by 2022, about 100 different models will be on the road. And if you've been following this, a lot of the major car companies have basically said they're going all electric and not using the internal combustion engine. That trend is repeating itself in public transportation, in buses, trains, and even diesel trucks now we're seeing electrify in increasing numbers. On the industrial process side, we're seeing industrial processes that historically were run with fossil fuels now are transitioning to electric. So That's a big trend we're seeing. We were saying about a year ago that we thought the crossover point for the electric vehicle versus internal combustion engine was around 2025. And that's a combination of things we measure about range anxiety and all of those other things. But we fully expect now that by 2023, when you're going to buy a car, electric vehicles are going to be a very challenging competitors to the old internal combustion engine. So that's one trend. And what that means to us from a grid perspective is that some of the studies have indicated that we could expect load to increase between 50 and 100% as a result of the electrification of this sector. And so if we're electrifying in the name of climate, then it stands to reason that we're not going to get there if we have dirtier fuels to produce the electricity that's running the electric vehicles. And so we've seen this multi-decade effort to have renewables integrated in the system and increase the output of clean energy. And so we're seeing that. I know the folks in this room haven't seen it just yet, but I think if we were to talk a year or two from now, you would agree with me that there is about to be an explosion of solar energy in the region. We have applications out there for what we call these community solar farms, where members of the community could sign up for a share of the solar farm and get some of the benefits. We have space for, let's call it 60, 70 in this first tranche. We got well over 1,000 applications for it. So it's moving incredibly quickly. The reason that that is challenging is a reason I'm going to, I kind of created a little bit of a thought experiment for us in this room to explain it to you. But it's two-way power flows. We created this system around big central station power plants, and then we were pushing out that power to all the areas of our service territory. Increasingly, what we see is those generating facilities distributed on people's rooftops and throughout our service territory, and consumers will sell output to the grid during the day when they have more energy than they need, and then in the evening, they'll consume energy when the solar panels are not working. So we're calling them prosumers, right? Because they're going to be providers and consumers at the same time. That's the second big piece of this puzzle. And as I said, I'll go into in a moment an example for you. And the third piece of it is our average bill is about $84 a month. And I know I could look out and say to many of you that on occasion your cable bill is higher than that and your cell bill is higher than that. But there is an enormous focus on electrical service. And I think, I don't know really what the reason is, but I think it's about this. I think in the case of owning a cell phone or buying cable TV, it's your choice. And so in a sense, you get what you get when you make that choice. But in the case of electricity, it's not your choice. Everybody needs electricity to have a modern life. And so as a consequence, what we're seeing is an interest in electricity, and maybe climate, maybe a number of other things, that makes it a societal interest and a consumer interest that's different from a lot of other products and services that are sold. And if you think about it, that's a great sweet spot for ComEd to be an advisor and a facilitator of customer choice for our customers so that they get all of these cool new products and services, whether it's electrification of vehicles, whether it's solar systems, whether it's storage in the future. ComEd could be an entity that provides information for consumers to make smart choices around those resources. And ultimately, we will buy the surplus energy because at the end of the day, that's what's going to drive the system. So let me go through the analogy. I just kind of want to make this real to you so you understand the engineering challenges that we're confronting. I tried to lay out the City Club. I wasn't expecting such incredible attendance. But we have here kind of a picture diagram. We have a kitchen somewhere here producing great food. And then that food is moved to the different tables. And the wait staff here is phenomenal. It moves the food to the different tables. It checks on whether the food is ready. It handles customer complaints and concerns out there. And at the end of the day, it handles the billing transaction. And if you think about it, that's kind of what we do. We have central station power plants. We have about 1,000 across a 13-state region. We move the energy from this 1,000 or so plants across 56,000 miles of transmission lines, and that's ComEd's job. It checks on the power quality, it handles complaints, and it handles the billing transaction. Zach, I should have apologized to you. I'm not minimizing what we do, but this is kind of the simple picture, right? Now, I want you to imagine something, and as we continue with this analogy, imagine if this restaurant were set up in a different way. Instead of there being a central kitchen that produces all of the food, imagine some of the tables here produced the cookies. Another table over here made the salad. A table in the back made the entree. Another table made the drinks. And let's suppose that they made more than they need, and they started trading with each other. Somebody trades salad for a drink, for cookies, for a cup of coffee at the end of the day. And the waiters, in addition to handling all their other work, are starting to handling these bartering transactions. And then let's imagine that they also start supplying the tables that don't have the ability to make food. They're handling those transactions too. And then finally, let's get the whole picture here, where they're still working with the kitchen, bringing out food, handling the transactions between tables that make food and tables that make food and tables that don't. And as we evolve the system, going back to the electric grid, we're not running a restaurant, but we're running a very complicated system with 4 million customers. And we're moving away from the central kitchen. We're going to have these distributed resources. And like in the case here, where some of the tables make food and others do not, well, in the future, some of our customers will have the ability to produce energy, and some won't. They won't own a home, or even if they do own a home, maybe they're in a multi-dwelling, big, you know, skyscraper, and they don't have the rooftop space to deploy solar on it. And geographically, this is going to look differently. The distributed systems could be in the suburbs, but, you know, as you said, we serve 70% of Illinois, and 65 to 70% of that is in the city, in places where solar is going to be a more difficult proposition. And let me add a little bit more complexity to it. We have 5 dual-unit nuclear stations. They've been the backbone of zero-emission energy production in Illinois for a long, long time. To replace just one of those 5 dual-unit sites with distributed residential rooftop solar, we would need about 2 million houses with solar on it. The problem, and let's just ignore for a moment that they only work during the daytime. But the problem is that, could you scale it up? To replace all of them, we'd have solar panels on 10 million houses. To replace all of them and the fossil generating units, we'd have rooftop solar on 20 million houses or so. Here's the problem. We only have 2.9 million rooftops in Chicago and the greater area. And as we study that, about 1.5 to 1.8 million of those are actionable. In other words, they could accommodate solar. But just to run the system, whereas today, ComEd understands whether or not the nuclear power plant is on, and that's the only thing we need to know. If it's on, we move that energy around the system. In the future, just to replace that unit, we're going to have to communicate and talk to 2 million different devices that don't run when we want them to run. They run when Mother Nature allows them to run. And at the end of the day, we're going to own all of these transactions. Nobody's going to care that 4 or 5 inches of snow fell covering the panels and they don't produce energy, or that clouds came over the system, or in the case of wind generation, that the wind wasn't blowing that particular day. And so, you know, wind is a tremendous resource, but over 85% of wind generation fails to produce energy during our hours of peak demand. And during the very hottest hours, we lose over 90% of the wind generation. The hot, still days of the summer are still hot, still days. So as you can imagine, our workforce and our grid in the future, it is going to have to be overlaid with smart equipment and in communications devices that we simply didn't build this grid for. We didn't construct a workforce for. We're going to have to handle transactions that, frankly, we're only learning now how to handle. And that's the great challenge for us. That's the great engineering challenge. And we're going to need it to do all of this without breaking the bank for customers. And so as we look at this, social equity becomes a very important dimension. The other thing about the green tables and the not green tables is this. Right now, where we're going to see the solar is in the suburbs. It's not going to be in the city. It's not going to be where people need jobs and need the opportunity. So how do we address social equity in this? Because frankly, we're not going to win the fight against climate change or the fight against anything else if the only people owning electric vehicles or rooftop solar are rich people in the suburbs. It's just not going to work. We've got to figure out a way to create social equity by ensuring the jobs that spring from this amazing transformation are felt where those jobs are needed most. And we have to address assistance programs and other things because while there's great opportunity here, there's also going to be sacrifice. Incidentally, I understand that if you stare at this long enough, you become somewhat mesmerized. I was tempted to add in, I knew Jim Kirk from Cranes was going to be here today, and I was tempted to add a subliminal I love ComEd message to see if that, I mean, nothing else has worked, so why not? Give that a shot. So look, you see what we're up against and what we're starting to think about. And we have a team of some amazing engineers over here who work every day. They come to us from all walks of life, from different countries. They're men, they're women, they're people of color. It's just this kind of phenomenal team that has been assembled. I think the finest team in the utility industry to tackle the issues that we're going to confront next. I told you all the problems, but let me tell you kind of the cool thing about this. If we do it right, and we think we can, we could clean the air, we could create job opportunities where job opportunities are needed, and we could do it in an affordable way. Like lots of things, if you do it wrong, well, then that doesn't turn out so good. But we think there's tremendous opportunity, and I've been working on Springfield politics since about 2008. I've never seen an environment that is more suited to having this discussion and actually getting something done. Now, as per usual, there are lots of different bills and lots of different ideas about how to do it. But the one common theme that we have today that we never had before is everybody recognizing the need to address this issue. Lead the region, lead the state, lead the country, and ultimately lead the world from what we are doing here. It's just super exciting. And some of the engineering advantages should be obvious to you. Right now, if the kitchen doesn't produce food, nobody eats. But in this future world, as long as some of these green tables are operating, we're going to have islands of reliability within the system that could operate even during extreme events. So we're going to have a resilience in the system that we never had before either. And we've talked about microgrids historically. We've talked about creating islands of security within our grid for important infrastructure. Well, as we introduce these resources, if we do it right and we put them in the right places, and in our business, location, location, location is going to be the key for where all of this stuff comes in. If we have a good plan for putting it in the right places, then as a design standard, we will have microgrids everywhere because the grid will be able to island itself and create these regions of reliability that will help us deal with cyber, physical threats, and the weather patterns that I talked about earlier. So incredibly exciting time for us at ComEd. As with everything else, we need great policy leadership. And I'm very much appreciating the policymakers are in the room, and we will certainly engage you as we go forward on this. I want to turn to a conversation that is separate, but in my sense is the same. My very first day on the job at ComEd, the one thing I had a clear vision about was changing the experience of our most vulnerable customers with the company. And a couple things were going on. First, you know, just be candid with you, observations. The city is, and the region is, incredibly wealthy. I don't think I've ever lived in a place with such wealth and opportunity. And it lies in stark contrast with areas of our region that have very little opportunity. I don't think I've ever been at a place where that's so apparent. I don't think I've ever been at a place where the segregated nature of the city is so obvious as it is here. We think, as part of this transformation, we could help to solve that. Some of the technologies that we believe need to be introduced could provide co-benefits around transportation and information technology that could help solve information and transportation deserts within the city. I want you to know that we are thinking about that all of the time, because investments will be required, and as a consequence, we want to get the most bang for the buck. But the other thing became apparent is I got to wear the headset, you know, go in and talk to our customer service representatives and meet with them. One of the things that we've seen a negative explosion about is fraud and scams by retail electric suppliers selling alternative and traditional forms of energy to our customers. And to give you some numbers around this, we had about 200 cases in the first quarter of last year of scams, and the scams are all different kinds of things. People dress up in ComEd uniforms. How many of you got a telephone call from ComEd in the last couple weeks saying, you've paid your bill, we want to offer you some great deals, right? Lots of people have. Everybody at ComEd and everybody at Exelon got those calls. They weren't from ComEd, by the way. But people impersonate the company all of the time and try to sell services that, frankly, are above market. I was at a press conference this morning announcing this program that I'm about to talk to you, and CETA was there. Harold Rice from CETA was there talking. He said that the scammers have taken the telephone number, the help number he has for the elderly in his community. They've changed one digit in the telephone number. And if you call that telephone number, you go to a retail electric supplier trying to sell you electric service. Competition has been great. And don't get me wrong, it's one of these cases where most of the apples are really good apples. But there's a few bad ones in the bunch as well. And so the thing we are doing at ComEd that we launched today is, first, a consumer fraud education campaign that will morph as the scammers morph their plans. We're going to get out there and talk about these retail electric providers who are offering a gift card or something else for somebody to sign up, only to have their electric bill skyrocket 2 and 3 months down the road. We're going to talk through those things. We're going to spend millions of dollars on this information campaign because it's needed. The second thing we're going to do is empower our customer service representatives. One of the things that was very frustrating to me as I did this visit with the customer care center is that our CSRs are not allowed to tell customers that their bill is high because they're paying way too much for the electricity commodity, right? All of those rules were put in place for good reason. They didn't want ComEd urging people to stay with ComEd. They didn't want to put a brick on competition. But honestly, we're seeing elderly, we're seeing the poor, we're seeing people like my mom and dad who didn't speak English, and their connection to society was having somebody in the family who spoke English. They were incredibly susceptible to this kind of thing. I saw it in my life. And I saw families like ours that didn't have money to lose money as a result of things like this. This is a passion. And one of the things we're doing today is filing with the Illinois Commerce Commission approval to have our CSRs to take the handcuffs off, to allow them to talk to our customers. And we're backing that up with legislation in Springfield on consumer protections that are desperately, desperately needed. And the third component is flatly more assistance for rear edge reduction. We see on average some of our poor, and just to give you some dimensionality to this, it's for those customers that are 200% of the poverty level, $60,000 family of four in Chicago, or 250,000, we have over a million plus of those customers. And many of them enter their winter season, and we can't stop service during the winter. There's a moratorium on stopping service, as there should be. But they're heading into the winter moratorium period already with balances that are on average $250. And doesn't mean a lot to the folks in this room, but it's everything to some of these families. So we're going to intercept those customers and deal with arrearages before they grow. And we're going to educate them on other programs that are available to challenge them. More needs to be done. And so one of the things that ComEd is doing in Springfield is seeking a continuation of the successful formula rate legislation that's led to a 60% improvement in reliability, best customer service record on history, record-setting performance in the Chicago region for reliability last year, and a bunch of firsts for ComEd over time. I'd say in 11, ComEd service, let's be honest, wasn't all that hot. Our reliability numbers were pretty gruesome. Our customer service numbers weren't where they should be, and the satisfaction numbers reflected all of that. Today, due to the unbelievable work of the team I'm privileged to serve on, and my predecessor, Ann Promisiori, the company has turned around very substantially, and now I would say is the leading company in almost all of those areas. Its rightful position among utilities in America. So we have this program. We want to supplement it with additional monies from the corporation. We've proposed $100 million of ComEd monies. This is shareholder money to support the most vulnerable customers over the next 10-year period. And even that still, folks, leaves a need that we still have to continue to get after and address. And ultimately, some of this is only going to be fixed by creating the opportunities and the economic engine in these communities that presently is missing. So I see these as related issues. It's an incredibly exciting time from an engineering perspective, from a policy perspective, and the perspective of customer service. And I'm honored to have the helm of the company at this crucial time. So with that, let me say thank you and take any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Joe Dominguez. We really appreciate that. And very calm for very exciting times. Glad to see that. We have a couple of questions here. And if anybody else has any questions they would like to ask of Joe, just hold up your blue card, and members of our staff will come around and pick up your cards, and we'll try to cover as many of these questions as we possibly can. Joe, the first question, which came in via the internet, by the way, because we do take questions via the internet. And if you couldn't keep up with everything that Joe talked about, you could go to our website and you could hear this program all over again. Okay, this is from Jim Harmoning, who's with Computer Bits, Inc., City Club member. His question, Joe, is the Chicago area, quote-unquote, sunny enough for efficient power generation, or do you favor better transmission lines so we can use that good desert sun? What is a reasonable number of miles to transmit electricity?
Yeah, so I think his question kind of embedded the answer within it. Electricity is a little bit like the ice cream you run to the grocery store to get. The farther away the grocery store is, the more of it's going to melt on the way. And so from my perspective, 400 or 500 miles on the transmission line is kind of a long distance. A lot of times people advertise on TV, someday the wind from the plains will power the big cities on the East Coast. And the reality is that you lose a tremendous amount of that power along the way, just as the ice cream would melt. So look, I think in answer to, I'll unpack it, I think in answer to the last question, I don't see us building transmission lines to Arizona and the desert Southwest to take advantage of the solar profile. But I do, in answer to the first part, I do believe solar is a resource here in Illinois, and it's a coincident resource. So I talked earlier about some of the challenges with wind generation not operating in July and August where our system peaks. Well, that's not a problem with solar. And so we do have great, you know, at the time our system peaks in terms of demand in the summertime, we have a really great solar profile here in the area. And the thing that we really need to work on is storage, moving some of that energy that's produced during the daytime for use at night. But that's an engineering problem we could solve. We know the battery storage technology will cover that. It's harder with wind because I don't expect we'll see storage technology that will allow us to take wind energy produced in April and May and move it to July and August. But no, I think there's a great home for solar here.
Okay, great. This is from Cedric Bodley with the Boy Scouts of America, City Club member. As an important company to the people of Chicago, how is ComEd seeking to be more involved in helping communities?
Yeah, so, you know, beyond what I think I just described, that at the end of the day, I think what I described is not the ComEd problem, but the regional problem, the worldwide problem. So, you know, we look forward to partnering on this great issue and creating economic development within the different communities. The other areas, everybody I think in this room knows how engaged our folks are in the community. One of the things that I think if you have this job, you got to do is read the Sam Insull biographies that have been done. And there was a line from Frank McCormick's work on Sam Insull where he just talked about the history of the company. He said, whatever problems occurred in Chicago, ComEd employees would descend upon the problem like benign locusts to solve the community problems. And I'm proud that that's still in our DNA. Everybody who's in a seat here knows that's part of our family history. Where we're working very carefully is in developing STEM-related fields for people of color and women. We see this huge underrepresentation by women and people of color in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math sciences. Those are the folks who are going to lead ComEd into this bright new future, and we need to get some more horsepower.
Okay, very good. This is a question from Ivan Solis, who's with HACIA, the Hispanic American Contractors. He really has two questions, Joe. Amy, pay attention. What is the level of interest investment in power storage / batteries? That's his first question.
Growing. I think as we're going to solve this particular problem, we're going to need a lot of storage. The way I see the technology is it's probably, there are some applications that are economic today, but I think it's a next decade opportunity. I think every day, as we're working with Argonne, other labs, other technology centers, and the universities, I think there's a bright future for storage. We probably need to make the transition beyond lithium in order to really take full advantage of it. And there's some great work on flow batteries and other things that give us a lot of cause for hope. But at the end of the day, if we're going to handle the intermittency of a lot of renewable resources, storage is going to be a big component of it. I think you will see that evolution a little bit slower, but it is going to be absolutely a necessary component of our future. I wouldn't bet against it.
Okay, now, this next question, you could both get in on this.
How much
are you asking, cash deal, for the F-150? Does it have any modifications like lowriders or anything?
Okay, who wants it?
That was a cheap shot. I can't believe that. I'm taking back all my welcoming things, yeah. See me on that, don't see Amy, for obvious reasons.
Whatever you do, don't call Victory Auto Records. Okay.
I didn't realize she was going to have a speaking role, by the way, or I wouldn't have said anything earlier.
You could be up here. Okay, this is from State Representative Will Davis, 30th District, I believe. Could you, he says he's not a member of the City Club. Representative Davis, $50. No other, you're going to handle that? Okay, Governor Ivey, great. Please acknowledge the role of diversity, the diversity of the workforce, and especially of your contractors that need to benefit from the dollars you will spend to continuously improve service.
All right, great. Now, this is a great question. Look, I'm not here if somebody didn't open doors for me. I think there's talent all over the place, but opportunity hasn't always been there. So I think one of the things the company has done that's tremendous is the work in the D&I community. We spent about, I'm going to get these numbers not exactly right, but I think it's $183 million with businesses owned by women and people of color in 2011. Last year, we spent $718 million, 400% of what we were spending before. I think, you know, sometimes you hear this story. ComEd is a really good company, and it does diversity and inclusion well. The truth of it is, ComEd is a really good company because it does diversity and inclusion really well. And if we're going to be the innovative company that we need to be to solve these problems, then the I part of that, the inclusiveness part of that, is something that we need to continue to work on. We need to have employees that are comfortable moving quickly to solve problems, not so afraid to fail, because we're going to fail along the way, that's for sure. But we need to work on inclusion in the workplace, and that's something I'm talking a lot about at ComEd. In terms of our workforce, I think 70% of the people we've hired since 2011 are either women or people of color, so tremendous numbers there. My vice presidents, nearly 60% of my vice presidents are women or people of color, and I think five of my six direct reports, including my boss of bosses, Diana Sharp, my chief of staff, are women. So it's made the company great. It is the secret sauce of a successful company. I think analysis after analysis has demonstrated that. And I could tell you that the experience we have of improving reliability 60%, avoiding 11 million outages, being the best in customer service, shooting through the roof in the way customers appreciate us, is not disconnected from the fact that we focused on D&I at the same time. These are related issues. This is cause and effect.
Very good. Thank you. Do you know any Elaine Dracakis? She's not your sister-in-law or anything, is she? Okay, because it's kind of an interesting question. I figured this was your softball. She's from the DuPage Children's Museum. Her question is, being recognized as an exemplary leader today, tell us about your early childhood experiences that you recollect that influenced you to pursue your field of study, thus bringing you to your current position today. So in a minute or so, your biography.
Yeah. Real quick, my mom and dad came here from Cuba. I was born here in the U.S. We have a saying in Spanish that some people arrive with nothing more than one hand in front and one hand behind. And that was kind of the way my mom and dad came to the country. And they love this country. They didn't have an opportunity to pursue education in Cuba. One of the things, it's hard to tell this story, but I got to meet my grandmother only once in my life. The rest of the family got stuck behind in Cuba. And she talked about my father always wanting to be an engineer, and that was to him, and I knew this about him, and it was reflective of the period in which he grew up, is engineers were everything. He always wanted that, and always talked about being an engineer and the great work engineers would do. My grandmother told me that my dad had bought these books after high school to, in anticipation of being able to study after high school engineering, and the family didn't have the money. And he symbolically closed the books. What was powerful to me was that 30 years later, my grandmother wept. I'm going to try to not do the same thing. Telling me that story. But like any good son, I wanted to follow and complete the things that my dad had great ambition about. And so I became an engineer. When I decided to go to law school, that was not a happy moment for him. As it turns out, he had great regard for engineers, not so much for lawyers. But look at that. That was our life. But we grew up a part of my life in a part of North Jersey where everybody spoke Spanish. And my dad got a great break to start. He's a sheet metal man, and start a small welding shop down at the Jersey Shore. And I remember that transition from this place where everybody kind of looked like me and was like me and everybody spoke Spanish to a place where I had to learn to speak English and deal with all that. And then you do, like I said before, kind of become the English-speaking ambassador to your family in this weird way. But, you know, the two experiences taught me a life lesson I'll never forget, and that is that people are people. You know, wherever you go, whether it's the Spanish-speaking community or, you know, what I went to, which was kind of this all-white community where I was the only Latino, at the end of the day, the people wanted the same things. And, you know, to take a page out of your book, you got to love them, right? You got to love them. And so that got me to be an engineer, and most days pretty loving. Amy will be the final judge of that. You know, many of you probably feel this, but I was the luckiest person to have my mom and dad.
And we're very lucky to have you here with us, Joe.